Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 629 for the week of August 24th, 2026. I am IKEA cop who's always missing just one body part, David T. Cole, and I'm here with Onimus Toy Train Sarah D. Bunting.
I choose violence.
Prospective vacation home tenant Tara Ariano.
Not enough fjords.
And tiny decapitation knife Sarah Baker.
Ugh, this is taking forever. Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. We have a wonderful episode ahead for you. But first, it is the end of the month. It is that time to remind you, join the Extra Hot Great Club. You get lots of perks, but arguably the greatest is the Friday bonus episode where you will find us at our weirdest and most unhinged, especially the most recent episode, as I recall. We are an independent podcast making negligible amounts from the ads you hear. We cannot do the main show without our paid supporters. We would love it if you joined us. Other listeners would love you to join us as well, which is why they've helped us keep the Extra Hot Great Mutual Aid Vault going. And Sarah will tell you more about that during her plug later on in the episode. ExtraHotGreat.com/club is where you find it all. And now, she's an actor. She's a listener just like you. You've heard her with us many times before. It's Sarah Baker.
Welcome back, Sarah Baker.
Thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be back. I text Tara regularly with little comments, questions, and concerns from Extra Hot Great episodes.
And I love to receive them always. You're always somewhere exciting in the car listening to our podcast, it seems. We are here today to talk about blood sacrifice. Thomas Berg is a detective in Stockholm at a challenging time. Someone has been luring uniformed cops out to abandoned houses with faked calls to 112, that's Swedish for 911, then murdering them there. Thomas also is not being assigned the resources he needs to investigate the case both properly and fast, which is why it's a good thing he has access to a detective who is retired / disgraced. Thomas's semi-estranged father, Alfred. The show was created by George Kay, who previously brought us both Lupin and Hijack. All five episodes were dropped on Netflix August 20th. We may talk about events from any of them. Let's do the Chen check-in. Sarah Baker, should our listeners watch Blood Sacrifice?
I think if you are into this sort of show, yes.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Agree. I think for what it is, it does it very well. And if you're not subtitle averse, this is a good pick.
Dave.
Let the wide stick give you the edge. Speed Stick Super Dry Antiperspirant.
Blood offer.
Oh!
Oh.
Ooh, language.
Thanks.
So that's a no?
No, I enjoyed it. I'm a bit of a sucker for Scandinavian murder mysteries.
Well, we're going to get into that in a second, because this is the kind of thing I like, and it's kind of a no for me, unfortunately. Although if Dave is going to keep watching it, there's only three more episodes, so it's short. Dave, as you noted, you are famously not really a cop show guy, other than when they're set in non-English speaking countries in Europe. What do you want from these shows, and how did Blood Sacrifice deliver?
I'm not going to put this up in the upper echelon of Nordic crime stuff that I've watched. It's very serviceable in that Netflix kind of way. Very consumable. It does all the pacing things right. Ending the episodes with the next thing, yeah. You know, the next peril is here. And it's got a rhythm to it because the MO of the killer is to use audio recordings of its previous murder in order to make it seem like that is the call to 112, their 911, and that's how they lure him in. So there's a particular sort of like pattern already in the first episode, which is like, it's nothing for you to figure out, but just when there's patterns in things that you can be like, yeah, that's the pattern. You're like, I'm so smart. So there's a lot of that. There's a lot of dumb smart guy button pressing going on here, because I don't really watch these to try to figure it out. I just let it wash over me, and just sort of the vibe of people dying in Scandinavia is fine with me.
Wow.
So it was just doing everything right, if not an exceptional example of all these things.
It's not brilliant. Mm-hmm. It's not groundbreaking, but it does what it does very well and very briskly. As noted, 5 episodes. I don't dislike any of the people. I don't think I'm being messed with in terms of the build or the mystery. And it does what it does well at a like B+ level. And sometimes that's what you want, is a competent example of the thing mm-hmm. that doesn't take 12 episodes to do what it does.
Sarah Baker, you are relatively new to this subgenre, although not to the region. You are recently returned from Norway, close by.
Yeah. And Sweden.
Congratulations on not getting murdered.
And Denmark. Thank you. This
feels like a very dangerous part of the world.
But I also didn't solve any murders, so okay. Yeah.
What about this one excited you enough potentially to continue if it did?
Well, I'm kind of like Dave in the sense that I don't usually try to figure these things out. I just kind of take it in. On the like mystery level, I'm like an Elspeth. Uh-huh. Like that's the show that I watch that's closest to this. So
sure.
Yeah, so not close.
Mm-hmm.
And I did feel a little bit like I figured some things out, and me being me, it didn't make me feel smart. It made me think, is this show kind of stupid?
Yes.
Aw, Sarah.
I know.
What attracts me to Nordic noir usually is that the murderer is like depraved and unpredictable and extremely baroque. And with this one, I felt like I was ahead of the characters a lot of the time, like when we have the first detective saying, that can't be Marina calling 112. She was already dead. And the other detective going, but have you ever heard of a recording? And like, this right. was a major problem.
Yeah, which had showed up in my notes 10 minutes before that. Yeah, that was a little tiresome. But yeah,
it's not subtle. Yeah, they're not trying to weave in their surprises. Like there's another one, I think in the first episode, where a SWAT team is leaving a building and like one of them shoulder slaps the cop going up the stairs as they're going down. Second episode, thank you. Mm-hmm. And you're like, okay, well, that's the extra SWAT guy that's going to end up being the killer mm-hmm. that's, you know, in their midst. And sure enough, that is what happened. So it's not hiding the things it's doing. It's showing you the formula. And I like, sometimes that's just what you want. You know what I mean? Like sometimes you just want, give me that classic Coke. That's like the ingredients they always put in it.
Mm-hmm. The story of a cop killer, but also the story of an estranged son and father finding their way back to each other. Did anyone care about that part at all? Sarah Baker.
When the main detective dude was at the first woman who was killed, her mother's house.
Mm-hmm.
And like his dad is with him in the car, and she starts talking about the connection between a father and his daughter and blah, blah, blah. And we get like, oh, they're making a parallel here to the story that's happening. But then they're like, show the dad outside just in case we missed it. I was like, we get it. Like, you can be a little subtle. But I do forgive stuff like that in the first episode because they want to set everything up for you. Like, these are the things to pay attention to. So it didn't bother me too much. But again, it was another moment where I felt like, okay, maybe I am smarter a little bit than they think I am anyway. Mm-hmm.
The father, it took me a little while why I was like, I know that guy. And I don't, because it was just that he reminds me of that actor. And I just thought of this in the moment, so I didn't look him up. But Tara, you can use your big actor brain to tell me who I'm thinking of.
Mm-hmm.
He's like a character actor. He always plays like galoots, big guys. I think he was like the leader of the Others or something like that on Lost.
Oh, are you thinking of the guy who was the second in command at Top Gun, in Top Gun, Ironside? My God, he was an ER chief.
Tell you what, we'll continue and I'll find who I'm talking about. Sorry to do the Darlene Love thing right now live on our Darlene podcast. So I will just edit this and I'll be back with the name.
It's a different Darlene and I already forgot her name, so I'm going to have to look that up too. I thought you meant Rex Lynn. Darlene Hunt, yes, thank you. I thought you meant Rex Lynn, who was like the boss of the bank in Better Call Saul. That guy?
Oh, no, yes.
It's not that guy. It's not Charles Napier.
Uh-huh.
But I'll find him. Is everybody excited? There's so many people yelling at their things, all their guesses right now on the thing. I know this is annoying, but also some people, this is like catnip. Oh, who's he thinking of? I'd like to know.
MC Gainey. Is that who you're thinking of, Dave, from Lost? MC
yes, Gainey? From Justified, totally.
Yep, that's him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, I can see that, too.
He's got a rootin' tootin' Western-looking face, too.
He does.
Yeah,
that must be. He does.
Yeah, okay. Thank you, everybody. It's MC Gainey. Look him up. You'll know his face.
Actor hunt is over. Sarah D. Bunting, I was amused that this one has taking it personally baked in, since it's a murderer targeting cops. Was this underplayed Scandinavian leaf for you? Could Thomas have used a little Elliot Stabler rage to spice things up? What do you think?
Well, he has a moment of Stabler rage in episode 3, but it's like Scandinavian. Fully contained to like his office, and then someone comes in and tells him to calm down because this is a socialist country.
Point of order, what happens in our lives if NCIS has a franchise in Scandinavia?
Oh my God.
Where things are done Scandinavially.
I would love to see it.
Wonderful things.
Kablam!
Just complete synergy.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Scandergy. I was thinking when Sarah Baker was talking about, like, you know, the cut to the dad outside, and it's like, we get it. That actor did sort of not cheat the moment exactly, but I felt like when the mom is having this speech about fathers and daughters, that he sort of was like, yeah, okay, like, as a girl dad, like a teeny little barely perceptible eye roll at the parallels by the character.
Mm-hmm.
And I did appreciate in the father-son dyad, I guess, that, like, in some ways it seemed repetitive that they kept sort of having the same prickly battle with each other in each episode, but that also felt realistic, that like sometimes these relationships are just like stuck in that way and in the family of origin space, and that this would not be resolved cinematically, at least by episode 3, felt pretty real. But I was apprehensive in the early going that it was like, oh God, like, so it's also like a, you know, rapprochement story as well as a murder mystery. Like, I don't need both.
Mm-hmm.
And we also didn't get the, like, cop's wife is mad at cop copping.
Yes.
Part. Thank God. So
missing his daughter's recital, a recital of all things. They couldn't do anything else but recital. They just went to that one.
Well, they also, like, they have her saying, I'm going to be in a play. And then the next day in the same episode, he's like, oh, no, I missed the play. Like, this should take weeks. Come on now.
Yeah.
Let people know ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
Should have been a permission slip sent home.
Alfred has a lot of problems. Building a sick model train set is not among them. Who is jealous? Sarah Baker.
I don't want to build one, but if I knew somebody that had one, sure, I'll watch it go around.
Mm-hmm. Dave?
Here they come, clickety-clack, down the track. It's lots and lots of trains.
Wow.
Clipboard's got something for everybody.
It really does. And you just play it like a DJ, like a wizard.
Mm-hmm. Bunsy, you called out the train set in your intro. Were you jealous?
I'm with Bakesy, honestly. Like, if I knew someone who had one, I would happily go and sit and watch it go by.
Mm-hmm.
Actually building it? Mm-hmm. No, that's too much for these old eyes. But yeah, it did look very soothing and mm-hmm. sweet.
Well, I feel like we can wrap this up with one more question, which is, if Brad Falchuk and Ryan Murphy decide to expand the 911 universe to 112:Stockholm, and they should, I would watch, and I have specced out some of the storylines I would like to see. Of course, the series premiere opens 911 Lone Star style with a devastating explosion at the Swedish Fish Factory, and future episodes could involve impalement on a piece of Ivar shelving at IKEA, prototype self-driving Saab goes road, etc. Dave, do you have 112:Stockholm stories you'd like to pitch?
Kind of like the Bull Semen episode of 911.
Mm-hmm.
The hair dye factory explodes, turning dozens and dozens, hundreds perhaps, of blondes into brunettes. It's tragic.
There's an extraordinary amount of actual, real, like, crazy blonde coming straight out of the head people in that part of the world. I thought it was like, well, it's probably not like that anymore. No, it's crazy. They all look like that Neanderthalic football player, that Norway dude.
What?
It's wild.
I don't want to know. This is more fun just living in my head.
It's MC Gamey.
It's MC Gamey.
Oh. Okay.
Huntsy?
Something about midnight sun-induced insomnia.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Psychosis.
Mm-hmm.
The northern lights are missing.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Somebody stole the northern lights.
Mm-hmm.
Got a lot of shows. It's a great time for shows.
Sarah Baker, something to add?
I was just going to say for my fellow wimps that it's not too scary or too bloody. Like, you, if you have any tolerance for mystery, you can watch this.
Great note. And that's coming from an Elsbeth watcher.
Yeah, was she keeping in her bags? All right. It's time to go around the dial. First up, Tara.
I watched the new Australian period rom-com, My Brilliant Career, on Netflix. It is based on the 1901 novel of the same title, which has already been adapted as a movie in 1979, starring Judy Davis and Sam Neill. This one stars Philippa Northeast of Good Cop, Bad Cop, which we talked about on the Patreon last year when it came out for its one and only season. She's also in The Newsreader. And since 2018, I discovered she's also been in a romantic relationship with Sam Reed, Lestat himself.
Wow.
They're raising a blue healer named Ronnie together, I learned.
Oh my God.
I guess we don't know his alphabet, but I was pretty shocked to learn that he's at least into one lady. But anyway, this lucky bitch plays Sybilla Melvin in a classic trope of novels from this era. She is a girl whose family of origin is poor, but has rich relatives that she goes to live with. Since she's not really contributing to her parents' household and has no romantic prospects because all she wants to do is write, so that's why they send her to a slightly larger town to live with her rich grandmother, who is played by the great Anna Chancellor, and her Aunt Helen, played by Genevieve Mon Mothma from Andor O'Reilly. Right away, Sybilla has two possible love interests. Frank, played by Jake Dunn, is also staying with her grandmother while he tries to find an Australian wife. He is English gentry and a tight ass, but thinks that Sybilla is interesting. The other one is Harry, played by Christopher Chung from Slow Horses. He is the heir to another nearby farm. He's more earthy, meaning we see him either in a skin-tight Henley undershirt or no shirt all the time, but his potential match with Sybilla has a complication. As the lead character who's in basically every scene, Northeast is very watchable. I was intrigued by the various storylines I have to assume are not in the book, which I will not be reading, like when Sybilla's uncle Julius comes back to the farm and she finds out he has a big secret. Everyone else around her is good. It's fun to see the guy I only know as Roddy Ho in Slow Horses being super sexy, but I'm about to spoil the end of the finale, so spoilers aho.
Spoilers ahoy.
When you have a romantic comedy like this, you expect people to end up together, and I know that the book ends with her being like, I choose me, I'm going to be a writer. Fuck that. Like, I came into this to see more kissing. And so she has this scene with Harry where she's like, they've been apart for, you know, reasons. He's been trying to make his fortune because they had financial problems at his farm or whatever. And so he comes back and he's like, okay, I'm ready to buy a little farm because all we need to live on is love. And she's like, actually, I don't want to marry you at all. And then, like, just walks away. And then we see her get, like, waiting for the train. It's so abrupt how they end it. Like, we don't even see his reaction really to her being like, yeah, I know you've been droving for a year, but never mind, because I don't want to be with you anymore. Anyway, it was a disappointment for me personally, but it is only 6 episodes. I mostly had a fine time watching it. Spoilers over.
Spoilers are over. It's safe to listen. Swedish sailor came by.
Yeah, sure.
Sometimes we add tons. I don't know what that meant. Sarah Baker, what have you been watching recently? People need to know about.
Well, that's debatable, but I have been watching, in the grand tradition of Tari Ariano, I will be sharing a lowbrow and a highbrow pick. Yeah. But I think it's highbrow. Okay, the lowbrow, definitely lowbrow. Whenever I've been on this fine program during the summer, I've bravely outed myself as a Big Brother watcher, and this summer is no different, but I have a new defense, okay? And that is, if you like this sort of competition slash watch people plot and argue type of show, you get a lot of bang for your buck in each episode. The Sunday episode sees the new head of household crowned, as well as their nominations for eviction. Wednesday features the veto competition, where the nominees fight to win safety for the week, and the veto ceremony, where replacement nominees are named. And Thursday is now the blockbuster competition, which is the last chance for one of the nominees to get off the block. That's right, they have three nominees now, and the vote and the live eviction. No, you don't need to watch Friday's fluff episode hosted by Jerry O'Connell. Yes, I'm still mad that the Tuesday episode is now on Wednesday and less evenly distributed throughout the week. And no, I don't sound like an idiot. You sound like an idiot. I don't watch Real Housewives. Let me have this. Let me have it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And for my highbrow-ish, I guess, show, this is a gardening show. This is, surprise, surprise, a gardening show on Netflix hosted by comedian, actor, and my former movie husband, Zach Galifianakis. I haven't stumbled upon something I've enjoyed so much in a long time. The episodes are about 16 minutes long. Each features a different aspect of gardening, sometimes a specific plant like tomatoes, and sometimes a concept like foraging. Zach visits a specialist on the episode's subject, usually a small farmer. And while big time goofing off definitely happens, and I laughed a lot, he and we actually learn a lot too. He also interviews kids on the episode's topic, and they're either deadpan foils to his shenanigans or crazy themselves, both of which yield hilarious results. This might seem like one of those shows where someone builds the whole idea and world of the show and then just finds a random person to host it. But Zach actually comes to this honestly. He had his own small farm in North Carolina for many years. So while he is his usual irreverent self, he's genuinely interested in what his guests have to teach him, with total earnestness and a light touch also of like, hey, let's maybe not destroy our planet. It's filmed in British Columbia and is shot beautifully. It has cool graphics, interesting, soothing music. It's your new cozy, oh, not everything is awful in the world show to watch before bed. I only wish there were more episodes because there's only six.
You should say the name of that show again to make it clear what it is, because it is
confusing.
SEO confusing. Oh. So once again, please, the name of the show.
This is a gardening show.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. On Netflix.
All right, Sarah Baker, what do you got to plug?
I am in a movie starring Rachel Dratch called Love's Company, which is a very odd indie movie, a true indie movie. And it just got a distribution deal. So it will be coming somewhere, sometime.
Hooray!
Yay! And I am, as always, Miss Selbo on Bob's Burgers. And I do have a few episodes coming up in this new season. Nice. So check it out.
Excellent. Woo. All right, Sarah D. Baker, what do you got? No, we just did you.
Sarah
D.
Baker. No, it's me.
It's happening.
It's happening.
We're merging them. Too many Sarahs. Sarah D. Bunting, what do you have for us?
So much Sarier.
Yeah.
Okay, so Prime Video's 90-minute documentary on Novak Djokovic, Novak Djokovic, The Wolf in Winter, is directed by Jason Hare, whose very solid sports doc bona fides include The Last Dance and a couple of 30 for 30s, so the film is not poorly made or dull. You have a lot of big-name participation from the likes of Boris Becker, Andre Agassi, Jim Courier, who is still cute, Mary Carrillo, Howard Bryant, etc. Although, as other reviewers seem bound to conspiratorially mention, not Roger Federer. I think Federer's absence per se is not terribly significant, but of the other bright lights of that, quote, generation of tennis, Rafael Nadal says like a sentence, and anyone else who might have had some insights, Andy's Roddick and Murray, Juan Martin Del Potro, all the guys who couldn't get past a five ranking for like 10 years and finally retired slamless, they're not sitting for interviews for this either. There could be no particular reason for that, or it could be that Djokovic is polarizing within the sport and without. And this is actually the main problem with the Wolf in Winter is him. I actually used to quite like him 10 or 15 years ago. I found Federer's tennis and his overall bearing boring. Nole kind of razzing the greats and twanging the stick up the sport's ass. I was all for it. His whole I feed on your booze deal is what I like about Daniil Medvedev today. But the issue with present-day Djokovic is that you can only leverage that kind of self-pity on your way up. Once you're a world number one with double-digit numbers of Grand Slam wins, it starts to feel a little pathological. And that he is still trying to do it, Ray, the Australian Open flap from 2022, and insisting that he was misunderstood and people don't know what happened, continues to be deeply off-putting. I think it is illustrative of what frustrates regular people about MAHA / vax denier weirdos, which is this insistence on the so-called freedom to choose what goes into their bodies. But like, buddy, you had that freedom. You chose not to get a shot. You chose to post on Instagram against literally everyone who knew you's advice that you were using the exemption for people who had had COVID already. And you chose to strongly imply while sitting for an interview that as a native of a country that was at war when you were a child, making you subject to the same rules as everyone else was triggering. What you actually want is freedom from consequences, negative reactions in the community, exclusion from institutions and activities the explicitly versus herd immunized enjoy. You chose, you got consequence. This is not a human rights issue. Shut the fuck up. And not for nothing, but an earlier part of the film that talks about the rest of his family basically eating beans from a can in an underground shelter so that Djokovic could go to Germany for a tennis intensive is almost entirely couched in terms of how that affected him. I understand that the documentary is about him and that he was 12 and didn't speak any German. I have no doubt he did and does feel pressure to provide for the family in turn in exchange for having gotten this opportunity. That is a lot. I'm not saying it isn't. I am saying that this contrariness that is central to his brand identity is not necessarily an appealing sit for 90 minutes. The other issue is that the doc is repeatedly wondering, as tennis commentators with nothing else to say have been doing ad somnum for half a decade, when Father Time is finally going to catch Nole on the backstretch. It still hasn't as of this writing. Why wasn't this doc held until he had retired and we could put this and him in context? If you aren't irritated by 2020's Joker, it's a solid sit. Even if you are, it's interesting to think about why it doesn't work. It's pretty cool to see that he was already hitting the backhand exactly like that when he was five. But you might be better off with the Fed or the Rafa docs instead. For my plug, your fellow listeners. As Tara mentioned, we have a mutual aid vault for Extra Hot Great and for our sister podcasts over in the Again With This Verse. If you would like to sponsor a year's membership in either club for a fellow listener, we would love it. It is a cinch to do. Email me at bunting@tomatonation.com to find out more. And if you would like to withdraw from the vault, same deal. Contact me. We'll see what's available. Everything stays anonymous on both sides. Thank you so much in advance for your support of us and your fellow listeners.
Here's what's coming up on Extra Extra Hot Great this Friday. It's totally 90s house, in which we take actors that were chewed up and spit out from the 90s Hollywood system. What are they up to these days? Well, they're doing this. It's totally 90s house. That is available to club members. Go to extrahotgreat.com/club to learn more and join. And then come back here next week. EHD Prime is offering up the fall TV preview with Eve Beatty. It is time for the Extra Hot Great Canon presenting this week, Tara Ariano.
We have had two Would I Lie to You canon pitches in the past couple of years, one by me, featuring all-time weirdo Sam Campbell, one by listener Leslie, featuring all-time weirdo Bob Mortimer. I might be pushing my luck to try to add another one so soon, but it's too late to worry about that now. Let's talk about why Would I Lie to You, Season 19, Episode 5, should be considered for the canon or series if you're a stickler. Number one, it starts with an elderly British aristocrat talking about a very indelicate topic. Full disclosure, added this episode to my to canon list while we were watching it, probably around 1 a.m. sometime in January, after our beloved valued guest Sarah Baker picked it from our list of submissions and I loaded it up. I had zero recollection about what made me suggest it, and then we started watching. I was like, oh, right, clip one.
Whilst attempting to break the world record for the longest ever after-dinner speech, I had a dreadful accident.
So that's panelist Giles Brandred.
Is he English?
He's a little bit English, yes.
His middle name is Nigel.
he's trying to break a record for the longest after dinner speech, during which, because of Guinness rules, you cannot pause for any moment, including to go to the bathroom. So this is, in fact, a matter of toilet strat, or rather, strat for no toilet and possibly ruining a pair of formal trousers. Everyone starts having fun with this story well before we get to any bathroom stuff. Giles, a former MP, writer, television personality, etc., planned a speech with a segment for each letter of the alphabet. Clip two.
Well, J was rather easy because J was for jokes. Yeah. You know, uh-huh. What does the king do when he burps? He issues a royal pardon.
So you did half an hour of that?
You spent 30 years doing that. You should be at home.
That's team captain from the opposite team, Lee Mack. When planning for his run at the Guinness World Record, during which comfort breaks, like I said, will not be permitted, Giles gets advice from someone in the know, clip three.
I explained to the president of the charity, the late Duke of Edinburgh, that I was anxious that I wouldn't achieve the goal because I would need to go for this comfort break in the middle of the night. And he said to me, well, you can take a pee in the middle of the night, surely. I said, no, sir, I'll be in front of 300 people wearing a dinner suit. He said, you can still take a pee, man. You can do it there and then. I said, how on earth is that possible, sir? He said, you'll be wearing the appliance, surely.
Said, sorry? The what?
The appliance.
No, you misunderstand when I said, you what? I didn't mean I couldn't hear you. I meant, what are you talking about?
He said, go down John Bell and Croydon, Medical Supplies, Wigmore Street.
I had a COVID jab there.
Just here. When I thought this story couldn't get any more sexy.
At 2 a.m., Giles realized he needed the appliance, which is a device you wear over your hearts with a hose attached, concealed to your pants, but worried it would be loud, so he timed his pee to a laugh, clip four.
It was then that I realized that the appliance had slipped its moorings.
What letter we are on here? Is it P?
It will be from now on in.
You don't have to be a dad to make a dad joke. That's a great reminder of that. So Giles explains that a balloon came out of his pant leg, was flying across the stage. He mimes this for the delighted panel and studio audience. We have our elder statesmen in this country who can go on a talk show and charm anyone. Nathan Lane, Steve Martin, Regis Philbin, we miss him. But a very posh British man is going to bring something different to a story about peeing into an apparatus in front of an audience. He's bringing something no American ever could. Number two, gives Rob an opportunity to do some of his most beloved bits. Will Kemp, a co-star on the unscripted show The Repair Shop, tells the story of having to run down then Prince Charles when the prince walked out with Will's favorite chisel following an appearance on the show, clip five.
What did he bring to get repaired?
A vase.
And what was wrong with the vase?
The vase is broken.
Obviously. Otherwise your show would be called Second Hand Shop.
Exactly. Apparently, the vase had been put on a window at Dumfries House, and one of the servants, I don't know, Giles?
Staff.
What staff.
So clever. confident.
One of the servants had hit it with a staff.
Will then sets Rob up for this clip six.
Surely in your job, you've got many size chisels, not just one big chisel.
But this is my favourite one. And I have a little place for it on the wall behind my bench.
What did he say when he was
waiting?
Waiting.
Waiting.
Waiting. Weighty, very weighty.
Let's have more of that. We love that.
Very, very weighty.
Really weighty.
Wonderfully weighty. I didn't know how you do it. I'm full of admiration.
Exactly.
I'm doing so... King Charles when he was still a prince.
The reason the audience is clapping is not just for the impression, but because saying who he's doing is part of the Rob bit. Later, clip seven.
I was talking to someone that I was with about, I don't know how to speak to him. Do I shake his hand? Do I bow? Anyway, before I knew it, I turned to my left. Can you stand up for a second?
I am standing up.
There you go. So... I'm waiting to greet him. So I turn around and he's already here with his hand up.
Anyway, Rob also loves to do a self-deprecating short joke. This one flows straight into Rob adding physicality to his King then Prince Charles impression while on his feet for Will to demonstrate a handshake gone wrong. We love when Rob gets to get in on the fun. Number three, this is my focuses on the comics. Dancer turned TV personality Tasha Guri does fine enough telling her, spoiler, false story about guest Kate helping her when Tasha broke Strictly Come Dancing's glitter ball trophy. But no one's really here for the guests in the reality show alum category to try to do comedy. So dispensing with Tasha as fast as possible to move on to Jessica Knappett and her team captain Lee Mack is the right play. Jessica is up after Tasha, clip eight.
Repel intruder you tried to with Kate, did you?
All right, Yoda.
Did I indeed, yes.
When was this?
Last year.
What season?
Season five!
What season? There are four options. What season? I could have said what month, then there are 12 options.
But she's only ever going to say one of them. So whether there are 12 to choose from or four makes no difference
to you. Well, she would have said one of them 3 minutes ago if you hadn't intervened.
No, but you're saying that there was some advantage to asking the season. Because there are...
So it was spring.
It was spring.
What month?
Knappett may not be a world record seeking after dinner speaker like Giles, but she does know how to tell a story about getting a couple of birds out of her house, clip nine.
Well, I ran outside the house, text Kate's husband.
Right.
And I say, can you come round and help us out? Mm. He said, no.
No.
Did he?
That's my wife. And then he followed it up with, she's got previous with birds.
All right.
So I rang her.
You rang? You didn't text her?
I don't suppose you're in the house, are you? Because I've heard you've got previous with birds. And,
It's a very bold text.
She's remembering the day with amusement.
That's about Kate.
She's looking back on that.
No. She's remembering the time her horse bit my nipple.
Lee, of course, does this every week, so even when he's given a story to sell that he doesn't think anyone's going to fall for, which is, as we just heard him say, that Kate gave him a Band-Aid after a horse bit his nipple, he makes it fun for himself and the rest of us, clip 10.
What kind of horse is it? How many hands?
Male, oh, it female? Didn't have any hands. I would say it was quite a small horse. It was 12 hands.
And how did he get close to your nipple?
Well, it was a hot day. I was lactating. The horse came over.
Yeah.
And he's having a little sort of around my neck area like this. And we were all laughing. It was a bit ticklish. Whiskers in the face. And then before you know it, chomp.
Oh,
straight on the nipple. I would say it was friendly. I don't think it was being aggressive. Sort of
flirtatious, one might say.
Yes, you could say it was flirtatious.
But with the teeth this time.
My own fault, I was squeezing its buttocks provocatively.
So how does Kate enter this story?
Well, I screamed a proper yelp. It really hurts when a horse bites.
Yes.
And there was blood and I had a white T-shirt.
Oh, no.
And then before you know it, Kate comes over. She happened to be in the field with some other horses in the distance, came over immediately.
What did she open with?
I think it was a song by... might be Frank Sinatra. I can't remember.
I think you know.
You don't get to be a series regular on one of Britain's longest-running panel shows if you're not quick, like Lee and Jessica, even though she's only a guest. Number four, generational comedy. The episode closes on Tasha's story of getting a boy's initials tattooed on her bum cheek when they had only been dating a week, only for him to dump her the week after that. Rob's recap closes on him doing devil horns at the camera. Hilarious, but not something you can see unless you follow us on Blue Sky, where I will post a GIF. Later, we get this, clip 11.
So how is it different for your generation? Is it just online? Are you just Snapchatting each other?
Snapchatting? Do you Snapchat?
Again, follow us on Blue Sky to see Rob's helpless shrug at the idea that Snapchatting is passé. But leading up to that, the differences between some panelists' age and Tasha's do get litigated in audio-friendly format, clip 12.
The thing is with my generation that we're talking about, my generation, we have this thing called dating. So you date for like a year, or date a year or two, right?
You do know that the previous generation had dating. That's how you were born.
Yeah, but back in your day, it's very like girlfriend, boyfriend. So,
I mean, I'm no disrespect, Jazz, but I'm not his generation.
From
Tasha's vantage point, we're all the same. Aslop, Charles Dickens, William the Conqueror.
So back in the day, you know, I feel like you'd get the ladies up and dance, you'd write letters, like it was very...
You know, you'd arrive in a carriage.
Yeah, exactly.
You'd produce your quill.
You wear ball gowns, yeah, like exactly. That era.
Yeah, I offer your sword.
Do the cursing to each other.
Back in the early 90s, that's how it was.
Maybe a 28-year-old really can't perceive the difference between Lee, age 58, Giles, age 78, William the Conqueror, aged long dead. Maybe she's playing it up for laughs. It doesn't matter. This is the kind of comedy everyone can enjoy. I hope you all agree and that you voted into the canon. If you need to, take a pee break first.
Thank you, Tara. All right, Sarah Baker, let's start with you.
I think my only exposure to the show is the previous canon pitches you're talking about. I might have caught a little bit when I was over in London. I do find these shows very enjoyable. I won't say that I have the deepest breadth of knowledge on this particular show, but I thought it was delightful. I thought it was so funny. Even as a comedian myself, I thought like they were so funny and so quick. I feel like on an American version of this show, everything would kind of probably be somewhat pre-planned or pre-planned bits to insert at the right moment. And this all felt very like spontaneous. And even as you say, the people who are not like this young woman who is a dancer, I think, but even she, I thought was like pretty funny or at least game enough to go along with what they were saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There was a U.S. version of this, and it was extremely mediocre, so that does play into
really,
your thoughts.
Really, who were the, like, hosts? Do you remember?
Who was the host?
Asif Manvi was the Rob.
Yeah.
I forget who the team captains were.
I don't remember.
Oh, okay.
I can look it up.
I enjoyed this very much. Great presentation. Listening to all the little clips again made me remember how funny I thought it was.
To update, the American team captains were Matt Walsh and Sabrina Jalice, who is not American. She's Canadian, but she was on the American version.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Yeah, I thought this was very quick, very, I mean, this is always going to be a joke-dense prospect or trying to be a joke-dense prospect, but a lot depends on the guest. And this guest was a little less dead air than you see sometimes on the show, which also my exposure, like Sarah Baker's, is pretty limited to canon presentations. But I mean, you know, a lot of it is reliant on that pace and not really giving you too much time to think about who's kind of the weak link in the joking badinage chain. There was a lot of physical comedy. This is, you know, a visual medium. podcasting, so that the sort of physicality of the king, formerly Prince Charles, imitation is going to be lost here, but I laughed very hard at that. The stop using words you don't understand and then beat MySpace, like just very determined to get that last bit in was very good. The timing of Jessica just fed up yelling spring. Then the laughter dies out. It's like, okay, great. What month? Just perfect. Really perfect. And this was a good array of jokes and stories that all seemed equally likely and unlikely so that you could play along at home. Not every episode is as opaque, I guess, as to which one is really true. But this was a really good balance of like, you can sort of debate and follow along from your own couch, and just very funny jokes that are like taking on a life of their own in the stories. Flawlessly timed.
Mm-hmm.
Very enjoyable. And so British. Like, only on a British panel show would asking how many hands and then having any other panelist even know what that meant.
Mm-hmm.
Like this horse girl emerita thought that was really funny. Although at 12 hands, that's a pony. David T. Cole, take us home.
Closest to the pin wins. How old would William the Conqueror be today?
603 years old.
Sarah's?
1,100 years old.
912.
998.
Whoa!
You almost had 1,000. Couple more years. Here we go. The battle was in 1066, as all know, but he was born in 1028. Right. For me, having watched everything up until this point, all 11 billion seasons, I would say the first segment is aces. That is 100% gold material about the appliance. And you did not expect it from that guy, obviously, from our perspective anyways, mm-hmm. having no idea who 70% of the people on the show are.
Yep.
And the other ones only knowing from Taskmaster, basically, to be honest. We don't know them from their works.
Mm-hmm.
So he was a delight. I'm going to be honest, after that, I think this episode is diminishing returns with a couple really good things here and there. A lot of it, Rob, which he doesn't get a ton of like marquee moments because that's not his function. But when he gets into it, it's always pretty good. And his expressions, his exasperations here, which I asked Tara to gif just because they were so great, are delightful. So I am in the boat that this is a strong episode, but there are so many other episodes that I feel are just crazier, which I gravitate towards for this show. You know, your Sam Campbell's and your Bob Mortimer's, as previously brought up. So for me, this is good, not great. So that's where I stand. But let's make this official. I feel like maybe that won't matter, but let's find out. Sarah Baker, what say you for this episode for the canon? Yes or no?
I say yes.
And Sarah D. Bunting, what say you?
iSpace.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm going to say no, but that doesn't matter. So. Would I Lie to You? Series 19, because yeah, I'm that person, Tara. Episode 5, you are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time to discover this week's winners and losers. Sarah has the winner.
I do. It's NBC's upcoming cop show, Line of Fire. I think it's like a Secret Service show.
Get down, Mr. President.
Yeah, basically. It has booked guest appearances from Campbell Scott, Sam Waterston, and my favorite and yours, Chris Chalk. If they're not going to revive the new Perry Mason, then I guess I'll just have to watch every single other thing he's in. Yep. Gladly. I think he's playing a president in this one. I'll be honest, I wouldn't have considered picking this one up even, but this is pretty good guest casting, and so let's see what happens.
And loser of the week?
Loser of the week is Lost, as Lost co-creator Damon Lindelof uses its excessively long-run delaying story reveals as an example of what lanterns will not do. So I guess this is Lost, but also Damon Lindelof, because anyone can give an interview where they're like, you know, how Lost fucked it up was the longer it went on, the more we had to push actually answering the questions that were at the heart of the mystery engine of the show. anyone can make that complaint except you. You fucking worked on it. This is very, we're all trying to find the guy who did this about why Lost was such a wet fart of a show. So that's how I feel about that.
Well, speaking about farts that are wet, do you know what time it is?
It's game time.
Game time?
It's game time.
Somebody's getting wet.
All right, everybody. This is the 12th game time of our current season. 12. Wow.
Wow.
Season scores are wowee. Tara with 4. Sarah D. Bunting with 4. Value guest represented by Sarah Baker, 3. So, 2 possible victories, or if value guests win, a 3-way tie for the championship next week, which is
God.
Today we are playing Navally from Seth, who earns himself a free shirt of his choosing from the EHG store at Through Methods. Seth writes, NCIS, NCIS Los Angeles, NCIS New Orleans, NCIS Hawaii, NCIS Sydney, NCIS Origins, and NCIS Tony and Ziva are not just the mantra I say upon waking up every day, but several real television programs that the elderly claim to watch and enjoy. In this simple and cogent game, 2 actors will be provided. Choose who has appeared on more NCIS franchise episodes for 1 point. Additionally, if you can guess their total number of appearances across a franchise within a 10% margin of error, you get another point. But, like episodes of NCIS, there are bombs scattered about the playfield, which is to say, a handful of the actors I will give you have not appeared on the show at all. If you're able to identify one of these bombs, you get 3 points. Be warned, though, if you guess incorrectly and an actor was on NCIS, you lose a point. Does not include the upcoming NCIS New York character appearances on JAG or Hawaii Five-0.
Thank you.
Let's throw it to Picky to see who is going first.
We will start with valued guest.
All right, so our order today is going to be Sarah Baker, Tara Ariano, Sarah D. Bunting. Are you ready for your first actor duo, Sarah Baker? You need to tell me which one has been in more episodes of the NCIS franchise. Here we go.
I'm ready.
Scott Bakula. Blah, or Maria Bello. Which one has been in more NCIS episodes? The back or the bell?
Okay. I'm just going to talk out of my ass because I am a very young person and do not watch these shows. I feel the back is in the NOLA one, and that's what I feel. So I'm going to say Scott Bakula is in more.
You are correct.
Woo!
Yes. Now, guess how many he's been in. If you're within 10% on either side of the target, you get another point.
See, I don't even know if that one is still on or how long it lasted. I'm going to guess he's in 23.
Not even close. 159 episodes.
What?
He was the lead of New Orleans, and he was also on 4 episodes of the OG, I assume, to set up New Orleans.
Sure. Wow.
Let's move on to Tara. You got Lucas Black, Tony Braxton.
Lucas Black.
Lucas Black is correct. Now, how many? How many for Lucas Black?
He was also in New Orleans, I believe. Now that I've said that, I immediately doubt myself. Was he in LA? I'm going to say 130.
You are in the range, yes. 100 and get this, 29.
Shut up. Wow.
Yeah. If anybody gets a bullseye, I will award extra points, but we'll see if that happens. That was so close. All right. Sarah D. Bunting, here is your first pair. Millie Bobby Brown, Billy D. Williams. Just being considerate, and we're packaging the 3 named actors together. Millie Bobby Brown, not from Righteous Gemstones, and Billy D. Williams.
Oh, my God. I feel like neither of them, but I'm going to say Billy D. Lando.
Billy D. Williams is correct.
I thought that was a trap. Good job, Sarah.
How many episodes has Billy D. Williams been in?
11.
He's been in so few episodes, there is no range. He's been in 2 episodes.
Oh.
No. Fair.
Back to Sarah Baker, Sterling K. Brown,
ooh,
Gary Cole.
Ooh.
Yeah, who's been in more NCIS franchise episodes, Brown or Cole?
Oh, God. Okay, wait. I think Cole is in one of them as a main guy. So I'm going to say Cole.
You are correct. You seem to know a lot about NCIS despite your earlier excuses.
Really weird. I'm 83 years young.
How many episodes has Gary Cole been in total across all the shows?
I'm going to say 125.
You are outside the range. The answer was 96, mostly on OG and a handful on Hawaii and LA.
Dang.
Back to Tara.
Yes.
Drew Carey. Jennifer Esposito.
Oh, no. Oh, boy. Ooh, Jennifer Esposito.
Correct.
Okay, I was really thought that was a trap, too.
I thought that was a trap, too.
How many episodes for Jennifer Esposito?
90.
24 on OG. Back to Sarah. Wow. You got Zac Efron and Ingenue Ellis Taylor. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Which one has been in more episodes? Keep in mind, got those bombs waiting for you.
I think this is a bomb trap.
All right, who's the bomb? First of all, answer who's been in more.
Okay, Ellis Taylor.
All right, you got 1 point for that. How many episodes has she been in?
4.
Just outside. 7. Your range was 6 to 8. All right, now if you want to name a bomb, now's the time to do it.
Now I feel like maybe when he was like a kid, he was on Maine or something. I retract my bombsmanship.
The bomb has been retracted. All right. Back to Sarah Baker, Mark Harmon, or LL Cool J.
Oh, shit.
God.
What can you tell us about these actors in relation to their work on the franchise, Sarah Baker?
Well, you shouldn't call it a comeback.
Been here for years. I saw LL Cool J once in person, and he is the most, maybe the most handsome person I've ever seen in real life.
Do you know what his name stands for here?
Fun fact, ladies love cool jeans.
Ladies love cool jets.
Ah!
No. Did he ask you to go get his nose from someone who stole his nose?
That's right. Harmon or Cool J?
Yeah, I'm going to say, because I don't know, LL Cool J.
Incorrect.
Oh.
Now we know it's Mark Harmon. How many episodes? We'll still give you this question.
Oh, God.
How many episodes?
I think he's been in 78.
That might be the worst answer we've
had
so far.
He's starring in 4 episodes simultaneously as we're recording this. And he's not even a series regular anymore. I'm going to guess like 700. Oh, yeah, my God.
Yeah, Sarah. I would say 500.
Yeah, 460. 500 would have been a good answer. Yeah.
Would have been.
Yeah. All right, no points for you there.
She really had to go out of her way to prove she's not a watcher of the
same. Thank you. Yes, I'm young.
Miguel Ferrer, Colin Hanks, Tara.
Miguel Ferrer.
You are correct. How many episodes?
Wow.
60.
115.
Damn it.
Yeah. Really?
Los Angeles.
So low. Yeah.
Okay.
Sarah D. Bunting, Lauren Hawley, Linda Hunt.
Hunt.
Correct.
With an H.
Okay, I was just checking. How many episodes?
Brother Mike. How many episodes for Linda Hunt?
Yes.
The Hunter.
325.
281,
oh,
so
boy.
309 was the high end.
Painful.
Wow.
Damn it.
Sarah Baker, Vanessa Lachey.
Lachey.
Oh, my God. Seriously? Vanessa Lachey. Jesus Christ.
Like Nick Lachey. Hello.
Dave doesn't watch Love is Blind.
Greta Lee.
Oh, I love Greta Lee. God, that's weird. What a weird combination of people to say at the same time. I have no idea about either of their participation in any of these programs. So I'm just going to say Greta Lee because she deserves it.
No, it's Vanessa Lachey. How many episodes has Vanessa Lachey been in?
La Fred.
17.
59 on Hawaii and a handful of OG and one LA as she was making her way to Hawaii.
I was going to say, she had a stopover. Yeah.
Sure.
Yes.
Makes sense.
Jamie Lee Curtis or Nia Long, most NCIS episodes.
Nia Long.
Correct. How many episodes?
22.
30, just outside the range.
Okay, can I also say I think that Jamie Lee Curtis might be a bomb?
All right. Are you doing it officially?
Yes.
Jamie Lee Curtis, the bomb. She's trying to defuse Jamie Lee Curtis. It's about to blow. No, she's not a bomb. You exploded a human being.
Oh, no.
Jamie Lee Curtis, who is in five episodes of NCIS OG.
Good Lord.
Yep. Six too many.
All right. Wow. Kablamo. Tara just lost a point.
Yep. And a finger.
Yep. Serenity Bunting, take us into our score break. Elizabeth Marvell or David McCallum? Wow. David McCallum? Really? Huh. Didn't expect to see that name in here.
I think we missed McCallum.
McCallum is correct. Yes. All right, how many episodes has David McCallum been in across the franchise?
200.
460, the same as Mark Harmon.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
He is OG except for two episodes on New Orleans. So, all right, that is our first half plus a bit. Scores, please.
Okay. Sarah, please fact check me. I have you and I tied with 4 points each. Sarah Lindsay Baker with 2.
Concur.
All right, very good. Let's get back to it with Sarah Baker's next one. We've got Daryl Mitchell, Isai Morales.
Daryl Mitchell the guy from the NWA movie? Nobody knows or cares. I'm going to say Isai Morales.
You are.
Oh, my God.
It was Daryl Mitchell. How many episodes of Daryl Mitchell was NCIS in?
Wow. Ouch. 38.
143.
Oh, God.
Long-running shows. Back to Tara.
Yes.
Bobby Moynihan.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Newhart.
Oh, my God. That's diabolical.
Battle of the Bobs.
Fucking Seth. I'm going to say Bob Newhart did, like, some kind of... played someone's grandpa in a sweeps episode or something.
Okay, so Bob Newhart,
yes.
More episodes.
Yes.
Incorrect. It was Bobby Moynihan. How many episodes was he in?
2.
29.
Really?
He was on Origins.
I think he was on a season, yeah.
Really?
He was on Origins plus one episode of the original show.
Oh, Origins.
Boy. My God.
Sarah D. Bunting, Michael Newry, or Chris O'Donnell. Which one was in more episodes of NCIS?
Oh, my God. O'Donnell.
O'Donnell is correct. How many episodes was he in?
440.
Yeah, it was pretty high up there. Not quite that high. 327. Damn. Most in LA, few in OG, one in Hawaii. Back to Sarah Baker, Polly Perrette, Lori Petty.
Oh, God. I know Polly Perrette is in a lot of something. What? Couldn't tell you. I'm going to say Polly Perrette.
You are correct.
Oof.
How many episodes was she in?
403.
358, which put the high end at 394. You're just a few out.
Okay. Finally, I'm close.
All right. This is question 17.
Spread Eagle.
Jesse Plemons.
Spread Eagle.
Glenn Powell.
Glenn Powell.
Glenn Powell is your answer. He was in more episodes of NCIS. You are correct.
Okay.
How many episodes was Glenn Powell in?
3.
2. Outside the margin of error.
Oh, my God. Jesus.
All right. 2. We know he's at 2. Anything else you want to add at this juncture?
I mean, I feel like you're leading me somewhere so that I can fuck myself up.
I'm just reminding you because I feel like you all forgetting about
the
bombs.
No, I remember.
Okay. All right.
I'm going to not say anything officially.
Very good. All right. Sarah Bunting, CCH Pounder, Lily Tomlin.
Seth, CB after class. Oh, God. I hate this question, and I will respond, Pounder.
You are correct. Nice. How many episodes with Pounder in?
I feel like it was a secret bunch, so I'm going to say 22.
157.
It was a secret bunch.
One of the leads on New Orleans and a couple episodes of OG.
Wow.
Whoa.
This is question. Everybody's last question. You've got Sarah Baker, James Urbaniak, or Wilmer Valderrama.
Oh. Wow. Wilmer Valderrama.
You are correct. How many episodes was he in?
Was, past tense. Interesting. Is it a clue?
Yeah, he died.
He died?
No.
Oh.
I don't know, maybe.
Not with that attitude.
200.
Look him up,
Tara. And 23.
223 gets you another point. 205, 226 was your upper margin of error limit.
Wow. Good. Wilmer Valderrama is alive.
Woo! All right. Good job.
You can call that living.
Good job.
Here's your last, Tara.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Wagner or Jessica Walter?
Robert Wagner.
You are correct. How many episodes was he in?
38.
13. All right, last question is for Sarah D. Bunting. You've got Michael Weatherly. How's the Weatherly up there? Or Steven Weber.
Oh, fuck. I don't like this one. I'm nervous. I'm going to say Weatherly.
Weatherly is correct.
Yay!
Yes.
Oh.
How many episodes was Michael Weatherly in?
175.
175 is off the mark. We're looking for 319. Loss in OG. Oh, he was in Tony and the other one.
Ziva's Wedding. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's how we snuck in that show, I guess, this one. Uh-huh. That is regulation. So let's get the scores, please.
Oh, my God. Sarah Baker finished with 5. I have 6. Sarah D. Bunting won!
I have not won a season of Game Time since the before time. It has been so long.
But wait, I got bomb scores to distribute because But you all missed your bomb, so I'm just going to deduct 1 point from all of you. So it doesn't really matter. But for the record,
fair.
Tony Braxton, bomb.
Uh-huh.
Oh.
Greta Lee, bomb. Each had one. And
was Tomlin a bomb? Bomblin?
No, she was in one episode.
Wow. Oh.
Elizabeth Marvell is the one that Sarah missed.
Wow.
She was the third bomb.
Huh. Seth. I feel safe.
Here's a quick question for a future use steel meal.
Mm-hmm.
One entry in the franchise had no effect on the game. None of these characters appeared in it. Which one is that?
Sydney is
correct. Yes.
Yeah.
There. Halfway across the world. Who gives a shit?
Take your opera house and grin.
Sarah. And she wins his hit.
Sarah.
All right. Thank you, Seth. Congratulations, Sarah.
I came from like a 3-0 deficit also. Yep. No? Yep.
Incredible.
Yep.
Having given up one of those many times.
The girl nobody loved.
Yeah.
Just won the Super Bowl.
Still unloved, but rich as creases.
Really. All right, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We put our heads together to discuss the Swedish murder import blood sacrifice. Before going around the dial with stops at My Brilliant Career, Big Brother, This Is a Gardening Show, and Novak Djokovic, The Wolf in Winter. Tara got What I'd Lie to You, Series 19, Episode 5, Into the Canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week. And Sarah was a winner of this week's Game Time and season. Thank you, Seth, for that one. And, of course, her victory was done.
Navally.
Thank you. Next up is Totally 90s House. Remember.
We're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano.
Oh my God, spring!
Sarah D. Bunting.
She's got previous with birds.
And Sarah Baker.
I've got to go. I'm not wearing my The Appliance.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Right here on Extra Hungry.
This is preposterous. We don't need to have any more time with this.
I did it!
Yay, good job!
Finally!
Yes, Sarah Baker.
My sound is all of a sudden a little bit weird.
Like scratchy? Scratchy?
A little feedbacky, yeah.
We're roboting for her.
Yeah. All right, so don't stop the recording, but exit Zoom, shut out of it, and then rejoin in about a minute after you shut it down.
Okay.
We'll see you then.
I told Dave the story about your key, your miraculous key recovery.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. It was just...
What happened to the car? Like, what? Does it stall out?
What do you mean?
When you drive away from the keys, what happens?
Apparently, the key stayed on the roof all the way down the hill after a bunch of hairpin turns. This is not like just a straight, flat situation. But I was at a gas station.
Right.
So I had to turn it off so that they could pump the gas. And right. It's Jersey, so you're not doing it yourself. There's a guy. And then I took my credit card back, tried to start it, and it's like, hold the key fob next to the steering column to reauthorize the key fob. And I was like, oh, no. And had to walk the road back to my dad's straight uphill and then didn't find it. Back downhill.
Yeah.
And when I was going uphill, I crossed the intersection. The where the key wasn't, but when I came back, I crossed that way, saw it, and was like, are you fucking kidding me? I walked right past it, and it's been 20 feet from the car the whole time.
That's crazy.
And as I say in Trainspotting, the kitten was fine. No one had run over it.
Mm-hmm.
Keychain was intact.
Well, so what I'm hearing is key fob should have magnets in them.
Yeah. Or?
Yeah. Also, I shouldn't put shit on the roof of my car, but I literally will never learn.
Or you could get an AirTag. And then you could find
Yeah, that's what easily. I need to do.
I don't think an AirTag would help you in that situation. They're not.
No?
Like, well, I guess if you're close enough, you can hear it.
The keychain is Pomeranian shape. You're probably sticking on that.
I mean, the way they work isn't like, it's not giving off as, well, it is, but. You only know where it is when somebody else walks by with a phone that can read the AirTag, right? It's not like it relays its info to...
Well, and my phone understood where my car was, but it wasn't based on where the key is.
Right.
So, I mean, AAA could have come and broken me. They're like, okay, based on your license plate, you have this car. We'll send someone down to break in for you.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Have your ID ready. I was like, okay. And the second I got off that phone call, I was like, all right, well, I guess I'll explain to the holy shit. There's the key. Yeah, it was.
It's like finally taking a big shit after being constipated for a week.
Mm-hmm.
She understood that.
Yeah. Crystal clear, unfortunately.
Welcome back.
That wasn't a bit. That was an actual part of the conversation.
It sounded very real. Again, unfortunately.
Sorry.
Well, all right.
I should
so
go
clear
on,
again?
Would I lie to you with that story?
All right, yeah. So start up your recordings again.
Yes.